I'm Ryan Miller, Crops Extension Educator. Earlier this morning, we recorded an episode of the Strategic Farming Field Notes program. Strategic Farming Field Notes is a weekly program addressing current crop production topics. A live webinar is hosted at 8 a.m. on Wednesdays throughout the cropping season. During the live webinar, participants can join in the discussion and get questions answered. An audio recording of the live program is released following the webinar via podcast platforms. Thanks, and remember to tune in weekly for a discussion on current cropping and crop management topics.
Welcome to today's Strategic Farming Field Notes session from U of M Extension. And these sessions are brought to you by University of Minnesota Extension with generous support from farm families through the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council and the Corn Research and Promotion Council. So we're happy you've joined us for today's session for crop management considerations for soggy fields. And soggy may be an understatement at this point for some. My name is Claire LeCan. I'll be moderating today. And we have three guests joining us. We welcome Seth Knave, who is our Extension soybean agronomist, Jeff Vetch, who's a researcher in our Southern Research and Outreach Center in Waseca, and Liz Stahl, who many of you know is an Extension crops educator. And we know it's wet out there. There's some severe ponding and other complications. Several of us on the panel are in super wet parts of the state too. So we see those issues out and about and we feel for you. We were just talking about all the road closures in our necks of the woods. And with that, I'll turn it over to Seth for his thoughts on how soybeans are doing and management considerations, especially in regard to the excess rainfall and flooding in many places.
Sure. Thanks very much, Claire. I guess I don't want to minimize the major disruptions that this has caused to a lot of people's lives, but we're going to really focus really specifically today on those areas of fields that need replanted or have the potential to be replanted or need some nitrogen on those corn areas. So, you know, we're in some respects working around the edges of some of these really, really bad spots, talking about some of those fields that are marginal now and hopefully we're able to get into. So regarding soybean, we have a couple things going on around the state right now this week, with a little bit of a break in the weather. There's some areas that are starting to dry out just a little bit. So I'm getting some calls on either replanting or planting soybeans for the first time in some areas. And the most important questions are all about maturity group. Lots and lots of questions about this. Our old recommendations from way back when said to keep a soybean maturity until June 10, and then around June 21st or closer to the end of June, then we could switch out one full maturity group earlier than normal. We've done a bunch of modeling in my lab, and this basically holds to be pretty true. I will say that even with those switches in maturities, those replanted or late planted areas of fields are going to mature just a little bit later than the early planted fields at a full maturity or portions of fields. But I think it's important for most farmers want to maintain as much yield potential as they can out there. Those switches in maturities really allow you to avoid most of the risk of early frost. I think there's always a potential in Minnesota for early frost and damage, but this keeps us out of the worst of it. I would say that farmers could plant near full maturity, even at a late planting date, but they're almost assured that those soybeans will be frosted in the end, and they will be probably assured that there'll be some dockage at the elevator. And various farmers have a whole range of different abilities to deal with this kind of soybean. If it's just a few acres, they can put it in one truck and get it in early or blend it off. If their whole fields are very large portions of fields that are going to dominate their crop, then they may need to think a little bit differently. I do want to mention just a couple other things that are questions have been coming up related to this. And one is about row spacing and others about population. Population's by far the most common I get after maturity group for these late planted soybeans. There is some evidence that these late planted soybeans can catch up just a little bit with some extra population. If we increase the population just a little bit, we can reduce some of that yield loss just slightly. It's basically enough to pay for the extra seed. So I just tell farmers that whatever they can afford to put down, they should bump up their seeding rate if they feel comfortable. If they're only planting these soybeans as covers, they need to think a little bit differently about that system. If they're really just getting out there to get something on the ground, then they need to probably think differently than the economic model. But I think overall, soybeans will the yields will basically cover any additional seed costs we have up. You know, up to 175 or 185 probably would be a reasonably high population. These will help those rows close just a little bit earlier. You have a little bit better weed control and then a little bit slightly greater yield potential on the backside. And lastly, row spacing. You know, there was some early recommendations from agronomists to plant with a drill or something like that to get out and get very uniform stands out there across some of these areas so that we can get earlier canopy closure. And I would just recommend that farmers use whatever equipment works for them and the scale that works to replant or plant these areas. If they chose a planter to plant it the first time, they should probably stick with that and utilize that same thing. So I've used quite a bit of my time. I think I'd rather pass the mic and let other folks talk a little bit, and then we can come back with specific questions at the end.
Sounds good, Seth. I guess I was just wondering for people who have, you know, soybeans that are in ponded spots that are maybe completely underwater right now, what is the concern there? You know, soybeans are kind of sensitive to excessive moisture, but they can survive underwater for a while, right? Like under ideal conditions, maybe?
Yeah, I think for sure soybeans can you know, be underwater for a couple of days. You know, as we increase temperatures the last couple of days, that number goes down. My general feeling is that what's still underwater is dead. You know, there's a lot of questions out there regarding saturated soils. I think we're at a point now where the soils have been so saturated for so long, even soybeans that have not been underwater or under significant stress, there's a lot of acres that look like that that are going to be a little bit challenged. But honestly, there's nothing we can really do. We can't plant those at this time. Those are likely to, you know, to be really delayed especially if we get any more rain towards the end of this week. So I'm not too concerned about those. Those are either going to live or die, and there isn't a lot that we can do with it. But certainly, I think farmers are going to have to scout more this year because we are going to have more problems in some of those marginal areas than we've had in previous years, for sure.
Yeah. So more scouting for diseases, and yeah, that makes sense. Well, yeah, we can hand it over to Jeff to talk about some nutrient management and considerations there. So Jeff, and then we can come back to you, Seth, or as questions pop up, we can hand them
Thanks,
over
to Claire.
You.
I'm going to share my screen. Can everyone see that okay?
Yes. Yes.
Great. So I'm going to just start a little bit with some weather. As everyone knows, we've had lots of issues with the rainfall and the excessive rainfall. The good side is our GDUs are running ahead of schedule, which means that, you know, even for some of this a little bit later planted corn, there's still a chance that this, or there's still a good probability that this corn that looks good is going to have good yield potential. And not only are we ahead of normal, but I would also remind the listeners that, you know, two of the last 3 years, we've at Waseca, we've accumulated almost 2,900 GDUs. Now, are we going to do that again this year? But we did that by having warmer than normal or normal months, and then later frost. And that as Seth talked about, some of these late planted crops, that later frost is certainly something that's going to be important if they replanted some of these wet holes and drowned out areas. There we go. This is the bad. The bad is, as you can see, we've had tremendous amounts of rain. And it started here at Waseca back in the first full week of May, where we did not really get many planting opportunities then until the middle of May. And then at the end of May, it got very wet again. And then we went through another window of planting opportunities and fieldwork opportunities at the end of May and early June. And then in early June, we had another significant rainfall event. Then we had a nice window to try to finish up some spraying and other things. And there was still a lot of planting going on in our area, especially for soybeans. We recorded a podcast, the Nutrient Management Group, on nitrogen and whether we should supplemental or apply supplemental N or recommend supplemental N. We did that on June 14th. And at the end of that podcast, I said, I'm more concerned about what happens in the next 10 days. And unfortunately, they were predicting excessive rainfall for the next week. That would have been last week, of course. And unfortunately, I was correct that what happened in the last week is really the most concerning issue. And obviously, not just from a crop standpoint, but from our neighbors and our communities, too. But starting there at Waseca on the 14th, since then, we've had almost 9 inches of rain. There's places that are much more than that. There's places that are similar to that and maybe a little less. But what's interesting is how widespread this is. So here, this chart is from the DNR's. These are actual observer measurements, not radar measurements, and then they're smoothed across the areas. So you go back to May 29th to June 4th, and that was a wet area for much of the South Central or the northern part of South Central. And it was okay here in southeastern Minnesota, but it also touched up into West Central and the mid and the central part of the state. Then you see that I've got a gap of a week here where I don't have a chart. And that period was generally dry through most of the state, except for just a few areas that saw normal rainfall, which normal rainfall for us here in South Central Minnesota is about an inch this time of year. Then when you get to the June 12th to the 18th period, you see this very large area that covers a significant part of the corn, soybean, and crop areas of the state, and also the Twin Cities that had anywhere from 3 inches plus in a week, which is, 2 inches greater than normal. And then this last period, which goes from the 19th to the 25th, and you see another significant area that maybe kind of cuts off at the Twin Cities and south, but the significantly large area here. And now you're talking about areas that have not only seen 3 inches plus, but many areas that have received 6 inches plus, and with some reports near 10 in just a week. So obviously what we talked about on June 14th changed again last week. So obviously we know about the drowned out spots. Some of these areas have been drowned out once or twice, sometimes three times. We've replanted some of these areas more than once, or we've replanted once and had them drowned out again. And one of the things from a nutrient management standpoint is the lack of oxygen can mimic some nutrient management deficiencies. You get these very stunted plants, you get unevenness. One row will look bad, one row will look good. Is it nitrogen? Is it sulfur? Is it just the lack of oxygen? It's sometimes difficult to tell. You see, someone mentioned this yesterday in the extension kind of update, this kind of crazy top, and Bruce Potter mentioned that. And I've seen that on some plants where you have one leaf that looks fantastic and then another leaf or two that looks all twisted and very yellow. And that's probably due to just water sitting in the whirl excessive through all this excessive rainfall. But people want to know about nitrogen loss, and obviously denitrification has been the driving factor the last 10 days. But we also had significant denitrification in those weeks before that, in those other weekly periods where I showed significant rainfall. Back during the podcast, we talked about, well, how much rain or how much N loss have we had from denitrification leaching? We thought maybe 30%. I would say now in most of these areas, you're looking at 50%. But when it comes to how much N to apply, if you're going to get supplemental on N on, still what we've done in our research over the many years I've been here is we rarely see more than 40, 50 pounds necessary. Now, this year may be the exception where, you know, maybe up to 60 or 70 might be required in some of these fields, especially in corn on corn. What sources of N were the first N applied that might be worse? I think obviously fall swine manure and fall manure is going to be the worst. Any fall applications of other nitrogen sources. Anhydrous ammonia, if it was applied early or late fall, usually is better, but recognize that we've had plenty of time now for almost all N applied except for side dress N applied to nitrify and potentially be lost. So I don't think there's any one source that's safe. Even spring applications of ammonia probably still saw some significant loss. What types of supplemental N and how and what how to do that? UAN dribbled or Y drops can be very effective. If you don't have access to Y drops, you can attach just rubber hoses on your nozzles if you have that ability and dangle them between the rows and drive down the field and kind of dribble it out of the hose. That works quite well. I did have a grower tell me that some sprayers do not allow that based on how the nozzles work. He's trying to talk to his retailer and see if he can get on their list, but he said it's a long list. They're right now about 2 weeks behind. So timing wise, how late can we do this? I think if these rescue treatments, ideally you like to see supplemental N or side dress N beyond at V6 or V8, but these rescue treatments, if the weather turns around and these are definitely needed, they still can be beneficial easily up to V14. After we get to tasseling and later, then it starts to question whether the value of these treatments and whether you can get a return on investment. Other end sources and other possibilities to apply urea. If you do use urea, I would recommend a urease inhibitor NBPT. This can be done with a high clearance tractor and a spinner sprayer. I did talk to one of our local retailers, and he said that the airplane will be here be around in the next few days to apply some urea. One of the things, though, that when you look at these drowned out areas, there's no reason to keep applying nitrogen to these dead areas. So I don't know how effective the airplanes are at turning it on and off and not applying it in areas that are already dead and don't need more nitrogen. You need to monitor that or you're not going to get a good or you're less likely to get a good return on investment if you put it in places it's not needed. And also you have the environmental consequences of that. Sulfur deficiency, I've seen a fair amount of that. You have these pale yellow stripings. If you applied a typical rate, which is 20 to 25 pounds of sulfur, maybe as AMS, I think you're probably still fine. These plants are just under stress now. They'll probably grow out of it as they get a little larger and we get some oxygen in the soil. If you want to add a little sulfur with your supplemental N, that's fine, but it doesn't take a whole nother 20 or 25 pounds. Other issues with all the rainfall?
Oh, Jeff, we had a question about iron chlorosis this year. I think this is just a good time to talk about it because we talked on our internal kind of extension call the other day that plants that maybe look like it's an iron chlorosis or iron deficiency might actually be more of a sulfur deficiency, that's more common. Do you have anything to add on that?
So iron chlorosis in soybeans, you can see some sulfur deficiency in soybeans when they're small, but typically we don't fertilize soybeans with sulfur. So yeah, it can be an early season deficiency because of all the leaching of sulfur and the lack of oxygen. But if it's an area of the field that typically has IDC or iron chlorosis deficiency, I would assume it's still going to be related to that, but it could be triggered by just the lack of oxygen making the other symptoms, you know, complicating the factor or complicating the issue.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, and that question was brought up during the soybeans, but then what about on the corn side too, as far as iron chlorosis?
Yeah,
that was some of the discussion yesterday was Was some of that yellowing maybe iron deficiency, or is it more likely to be sulfur?
Yeah, it's more likely to be sulfur or this crazy top, which you see in this picture on the right. And it could possibly be zinc, but zinc is usually these long white strips. But I would say it's most likely sulfur.
Thanks. Yep.
That's all I have. I just wanted to mention, obviously we got some erosion. So when you're going across these fields with sprayers or supplemental N, be careful. And also the compaction. We took some soil samples earlier this week, and it's amazing how this heavy rainfall can compact soils. The fields are very hard, and that really hurts infiltration when we get more rain down the in days to come. I will stop sharing, or maybe Rick can do that.
Thanks, and make sure to put your questions in the Q&A and we'll try to get to them. And I will probably have some time for questions at the end as well. But for right now, I'll hand it over to Liz, who's now going to talk about some of our options if we are in a prevented plant situation. So take it
Yeah,
away, Liz.
sure. Thanks, Claire. And again, being in southwestern Minnesota, yeah, there's just been some really devastating impacts. You don't really have any idea how bad it's gonna be when they talk about the rain, like you were talking, Jeff. Yeah, it's just been incredible. So again, hearts go out to everybody who's dealing with property damage and not being able to get anywhere because they're all isolated, roads closed all over. But crops, yes, the crop areas certainly have been impacted. We do have a lot of fields that were not able to be planted. I shouldn't say a lot, but there's fields here and there that were not able to be planted in the first place. So we have prevent plant. Then of course we have fields that were planted and now are completely underwater. And yeah, they're just when you look at the calendar and when we're ever expecting those fields to dry out, not really realistic to put any corn or soybeans in those areas. So then that's where another option would be, okay, let's look at cover crops. The reason to look at that, well, again, whenever you have these drawn out spots or prevent plant area, you've got different options. One would be, okay, you could do nothing. If you do nothing, yep, that's just a great spot for water hemp, for example, and our late emerging weeds. And you think about that, if you're not controlling those weeds, you're going to build up a tremendous resupply to that weed seed bank, and you'll deal with those issues for years to come. I'm sure we've all seen those spots, that have been drowned out, and then the weeds just go to town. So that's a big concern if we don't do anything. Plus, you have issues with potential for erosion and so forth. Wind erosion, more soil erosion if we continue to get more rain. So again, but that is, that's an option. Otherwise, you could do tillage to control the weeds. And again, your ability to do that, to do anything, is how accessible are these drawn out spots to be able to get in? Because hopefully you do have crop around these spots, because you have to be thinking, okay, can I get to this area? Are you going to be driving over crop to get there? All these things you've got to weigh out, on whether what you can do. But again, if it's something you could do tillage, that is an option as well. But there again, now we're not having anything growing in that area of the field. We do have concerns about fallow syndrome, and if you not familiar with that, there's good fungi. I'm sure Jeff could give you a more scientific explanation, but I'll just say, there's good fungi in the soil that help with nutrient uptake of the plants. They need to have living roots to survive. If we don't have growing plants out there, they just their populations really drop, and that then can affect your crop yield the next year. So again, it's good to have something growing out in that area too. And also, if you're in a situation where you have livestock, if you, again, can plant a cover crop, you could use that cover crop for forage, potentially too. That is one thing that has changed from our last time that we've dealt with, or last times we've dealt with prevent plant. Again, always check with your crop insurance person for sure. The latest information that I have as well is, if you plant a cover crop, you can harvest that for forage. You cannot harvest that for seed, but you could harvest that for forage. So that is a potential So just again, some things to think about. We've looked at, I worked with Axel Garcia at the Southwest Research and Outreach Center at Lamberton for, I think we did this trial for 4 years, just looking at different cover crop options that you could plant, you know, around the middle of July, again, looking at this prevent plant or drown out spots. And it's been pretty interesting what we've found. You know, you do have some different options. Of course, when you look at cover crops, you've got your general families, you've got your brassicas, you've got your legumes, you've got your grasses. We've planted, you know, a different suite of cover crops out there. Hands down and above, you know, we've looked at sorghum sedan grass, for example, tremendous biomass producer. You know, if you're planting that in the middle of July, if you're looking for forage, that has just knocked it out of the park. We've looked at some of our data. It's over 6,000 pounds per acre biomass we produce, you know, by the end of the season with sorghum sedan grass. Your millets come in very close to that too, like pearl millet, Japanese millet we've looked at. And those also did very well, again, for biomass production. We've had tillage radish out there as well too, and some years that didn't do so well. The last couple of years we did the study, it really took off. So that's another one you could get some really nice biomass production. There's also options you could look at, like, you know, oats or cereal or rye. Again, those are cooler season grasses, so they don't do as well, you know, when you're planting them in the heat of the summer, but they did still produce some respectable biomass. We had, by, you know, the end of October, they were up to about over 3,000 pounds per acre. So it took a while though for those to take off too. So that's something to look at. If it's slower to get going, you're going to have more issues with weed control. So you want to have, it's nice to have something that really takes off. And the legumes, yeah, I know people really like to look at those, you know, for a nitrogen benefit. We have had a challenge, you know, really, they've been slower to take off. They have not liked being planted at that time. In our trials, we've had more challenges getting those to take off, but those are an option too. We have had them, like crimson clover, we've looked at, we've planted that in a mix as well. But again, there's a number of different options, but, you know, things to look at, you know, what's your availability of seed, what's the cost, you know, how big of an area are you looking at? You know, and a number of things. Do you want something to overwinter or not too, or do you want it to winter kill? Like the sorghum sedan, it's going to winter kill. Pearl millets, you know, and the millets, those will winter kill. Cereal rye, planted that time, probably, you know, shouldn't winter kill, but it might, because again, it doesn't get as well of established. But a lot of different things to think about. We do have a lot of resources online, and I think those will get posted on this webinar. We'll also have those with the recording here too, of to look at for different types of options. I don't know if you have any questions or other comments, but yeah, it's a tough situation. And I think availability of seed and the cost and your ability to get out to these areas is really going to be a big factor in determining what you can do.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. And I know you have some resources that you'll share for kind of cover crop considerations in our resource list. But there's also the Midwest Cover Crop Council has a selector tool, so that can maybe help people, you know, kind of, they can put in when their planting date would be for that cover crop and get some options there, as well as it considers frost dates for the county and that.
That's right. And I can't believe I forgot this. You also got to look at, did you apply a herbicide down beforehand? Yes. Too? So, you know, because again, your herbicide can control that cover crop too. So again, you got to look at that history. But again, we have some nice resources that kind of go through that whole decision process.
And we do have a question that popped up. Do we have some do nots that we should be aware of? I think that's in relation to cover crops, Liz.
That's a great question. Well, one caution we always have is something like buckwheat, or, you know, something that can bolt and produce seed fast. That can be a challenge. You know, again, can grow very fast. You can get a lot of ground cover, but then it can produce seed pretty fast too. So you have to keep your eye on that. And if you don't want to have buckwheat next year in that area, you know, try to control that before you would get seed production. So that would be one of those, yeah, maybe not a do not, but have a little asterisk, proceed with caution.
Yeah, good point. I will just say that we know that these weather conditions can be really stressful, especially when things aren't under, our control. And so we do have a resource in our resource document that'll be shared with you about taking care of yourself under stress. So just wanted to say we feel for you and we know it's stressful, and take care of yourselves. So as we part here, I just want to thank you again for joining us and thank our sponsors, the Minnesota Corn Research and Promotion Co Council and the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council.